and I hope you had a good night. Let me know for the second day. Welcome Jeremy Ellison, one of the main developers of Zamba, currently working for HP. And the next two talks will be about the possibilities of making Zamba really scalable, by clustering them. We have the more internal theoretical talk, I would say, from Jeremy Ellison, and then from Sven Ume after that, who has put Zamba together with AFS and big storage solutions, to have really many users on a single Zamba machine. So, welcome Jeremy Ellison for the first talk today, and
Thank you very much, Volker. Don't clap, I haven't done anything yet. First of all, I'd like to apologise for giving the talk in English, especially as it's a conference in Germany. I kind of feel a little bit bad that I think possibly all of the talks are going to be in English. So my only excuse, I'm afraid, and rather a poor one, is that I'm actually from England, and like most English people, I don't even speak one language terribly well. Doing German as well isn't something that I could really stretch to, I'm afraid. But having said that, please feel free to ask questions in whatever language. I'm sure we can find a translator. Obviously, you know, if you feel comfortable asking questions in German, please go ahead and do that, and then Volker will translate and shout at me. So this talk is about clustering Zamba. It doesn't have any numbers in it, so as Volker said, this is the more theoretical talk, because this is something that I've been thinking about for a time. I've been talking to a fair number of vendors about the technical challenges needed to make this work in a really correct way, but I haven't actually sat down and tested this out, run large clusters. So I'm really looking forward to listening to the second talk, which will actually talk about someone who isn't just talking about it, who's actually gone out and done something. So the quote at the bottom, "Everyone talks about the weather, but no one does anything about it," was apparently a Mark Twain quote on the New England weather, which is typically awful, like the real England weather. And clustered Zamba and clustered SMB is one of those things that everybody talks about but nobody seems to do really well, including Microsoft. And I'm hoping in this talk to go into some of the reasons why that actually is the case. So with that, let's talk about what it is that we're actually trying to achieve. Let's try and define some goals, if you were, that we want to get to. So the ideal file server, clustered file server, scalable server, looks basically like just a very big single box. Doesn't matter how many CPUs or servers you have in there, it looks like a single image, it has one address, it has one name, all the clients can connect to it. If any part of it fails, it magically repairs itself and appears on the same IP address or whatever. All of the servers that constitute its internal serve out the same set of files, or any change made to any file is immediately seen by all the file servers, so that implies a distributed file system. And if you want it to go faster, you just add more disk or more servers and everything magically just works. So let's have a look at this completely idealized file server and point out some of the features. So at the top, by the way, I sort of stole these off a clip art site, and I wish I'd met Simo before the presentation, because he has much better clip art than me. he took it off Dell's site, I think. So here are the clients at the top. They're all talking to something that I'm calling the virtual server, which is basically the lump of software that makes the clustered server look like a single system, the thing that maps the name and the IP addresses and whatever. Then below that is what I'm calling the server pool, which is basically the clustered set of servers that communicate between each other and make the distributed system actually work. So the server pool is where you would add more server resources if you wanted to make it go faster. And then at the bottom there is the disk pool, which may essentially be a that actually could be another set of servers connected by network attached storage, NFS or whatever, or it could be a storage area network or SAN. So is there anyone in this room who's actually implemented a SAN? Anyone have? Yeah, a few people. So the interesting thing I find about SANs is that until there is a real distributed file system that actually works with SANs, don't you feel like you've just bought a very expensive, very long SCSI cable? I know sort of vendors push them and everything, but it's like without a real distributed file system that multiple sandboxes can talk to, really all it is a long SCSI cable. Anyway, so there is a SAN interconnect with fiber channel or whatever, very long SCSI cables connecting all the servers to all the other disks to make a coherent disk pool. So there it is, wonderful, we're done, although not. So why is it really hard to make this work? Well, as it says on the slide, state. NFS versions 2 and 3 were designed to be stateless, except for some of the ugly things like the locking protocol, but they have much simpler semantics than SMB or SIS. So nobody really has done a completely... a complete failover of a true failover of a SIS or SMB connection, because you are sat on top of a TCP stream and it's almost impossible or very difficult to fail over a TCP stream with all the active state associated with it. So the best that everybody does, you know, including Microsoft's clustering file server solution, is to essentially have failover and let the clients reconnect. And that, in practical terms, is usually good enough, in that you only get really upset if you were in the middle of saving your latest Word epic or PowerPoint or whatever and it goes down and blows the file away. But then you shouldn't have been using Windows in the first place, so I don't have much sympathy. All the SMB clusters basically rely on the client failover. They really are just failover solutions. So as I say, SMB actually contains a lot of state, and it's managing that state in a distributed system that I'm going to be talking about. The main thing about the state that makes clustering SMB very hard is the fact that, unlike NFS, where you can make a point permission check to see if you can have an open or not, essentially the data that you need to know to make an access or no access decision essentially exists on the metadata, the inode that exists that describes the file. In SMB, you have to check every other damn open file in the system just in case someone has it open with a conflicting deny mode. And that one stupid semantic defined for DOS, single DOS boxes sat in a corner somewhere has sort of been grandfathered in to the SMB protocol and therefore is causing trouble, you know, 15, 20 years later when you're trying to do clustered computing. So let's look at the front piece, and just to flip back, the piece I'm talking about is the virtual server software magic. So let's try this try and attack this problem by looking at the virtual server piece. So what do you need to make that work? Well, you need a lump of software that essentially takes several incoming TCP streams from clients and then manages to demultiplex the individual SMB requests and farm them out to the servers in the back end in the server pool that are actually handling the specific requests from that client. So essentially you want to allocate one client to any one of the free servers, and you would have some resource management that decides which is a free server. But in order to do that from a single IP address or single address front end, you have to actually interfere with the SMB stream, demultiplex it, and essentially create several virtual SMB streams out of one incoming client stream. So the first decision that you would make is basically any IPC dollar connections or remote procedure calls, you would shovel onto one server and say, okay, that's going to be my IPC dollar server for the cluster. Now, it may be doing other things, but you would definitely put all of the IPC dollars onto one server, mainly because of the Godzilla-sized horror that is the printing subsystem. And if you've ever, if you were here last year and you saw my talk, basically which was like an hour and a half of whining about how horrible the printing was, you'll know why you really don't want to try and do a distributed or clustered print server. People who want to do things like that, basically, they really need specialized solutions with client changes. So essentially, because with SMB, everything is connected to everything else, you can't split out the printing and the IPC dollar. You have to have it because the clients will expect it. So you just stick it on one server, and all of the IPC streams you would push onto that server in the back end pool. So all the other servers are there for file service, possibly even the one that's handling the IPC dollar traffic as well. It's a much simpler problem to deal with. You don't have to deal with RPC handles and how they're reused between connections and all the rest of it. You don't have to deal with clustered remote procedure call state. And also, it's where the money is. So most vendors concentrate on serving terabytes and terabytes of files, because that's really what most people are interested in. I think only HP is interested in terabytes and terabytes of printing. So, and that's mainly because they sell the ink. So if you look at the state that you have for a file, here's a picture of an incoming TCP pipe from a client. By the way, isn't OpenOffice cool, the way you can do these little graphics? Sorry. after coming from Applix, which is what I used to do all my presentations on, OpenOffice has been a real piece of fun to start using. So you've got the SMB requests, each of which has a little ID on it called MID or multiplex ID, which you use to split apart. And then let's look at some of the context, the main context that comes in. You have a user ID, which in SAMBRE is called a VUID, virtual user ID. You have a tree ID, TID. And then when you open a file, attached to that, you have the open file ID. Now, inside SAMBRE, that maps to actually several state tables, which hold things like the current device and inode, which obviously would have to be unique across the entire backend file system. The share mode that the file has opened, which is the thing that causes all the trouble. The delete on close state, which when I first saw it seemed a really simple problem and has taken like 5 iterations of SAMBRE to even get close to correct. That's a real subtle one. The oplock state, obviously. Is there anyone here who just checking, is there anyone here who doesn't know what oplocks are? Just okay, there are a few people. Right. Oplocks are essentially file leases, so that when you open a file, the client is guaranteed that no one else... It's a very simplified solution. The client is guaranteed that no one else has the oplock, has that file open, and can therefore cache it locally. And that's great for performance, as Richard mentioned yesterday. Gives you a 50% boost. But the problem is, it means that you really have to know when a file has a client... when a client has a file open, so that you can withdraw its lease on demand. And again, it's more state that the middle server pool needs to keep. And then the other thing is the SMB locks state, which we keep separate from the file system backend POSIX locks so that we can map the 64-bit unsigned SMB locks onto whatever backend lock system that we have. So that's just an example of some of the states. So to actually do this splitting apart, you would have to have a piece of software, the front-end virtual server piece, that basically understands all the current open SMB VUIDs and free IDs and knows how to demultiplex. XP have changed semantics. In actually Windows 2000, this is an interesting test that I actually only found out, I think, last week when I was playing with SMB Torture, is that once you have a valid file ID for a file, you can reuse that file ID with any active tree ID and virtual user ID, and it will still access the file. And I thought, oh, that really sucks. That's terrible. Isn't there some problem you can exploit with that? And then I thought about it and decided there probably wasn't. It was just kind of fairly bad design. And so I then, just for a laugh, I ran the same torture test against server and found that we had the same problem. so that was a little embarrassing. So I now fixed that, and in the next release, like Windows XP and above, we check that things match to make sure that you can't use a file ID on anyone else's connection. So, is anyone here running into the Windows 2000 terminal server problem? Does anyone here know what I'm talking about? Mainly people in the Samba team. Okay, I will have a little digression and explain. Windows NT terminal server has a mode, because Windows NT as a file server can only open a restricted number of files. I think it's like 2,000 files per TCP connection. So what they did was they had a registry entry that allowed a terminal server client to say, okay, I will open a new SMB connection for every single new user that's logged onto terminal server. Now, with Windows 2000, they removed the restriction of 2,000 files per TCP connection, so they also took away that registry option. And in fact, on a conference call I had with them, with a vendor who will remain nameless, who was very annoyed about this because they were losing business, Microsoft claimed that that code had, quote, been removed and was no longer possible to put back in, because it had the nice side effect of basically screwing Samba over for them. And then I pointed out that, well, you could actually cause a terminal server to connect multiple times by just adding a new NetBIOS alias, and they went pretty quiet. Because obviously the code is still there, it's just that they removed the registry key that actually allows it to work for Windows 2000 terminal server. But anyway, they refused to back down. So the problem with the Windows 2000 terminal server is that if you're serving files from a Samba server, all the user connections on a Windows 2000 terminal server want to be sent down one SMB connection, which obviously if you've got 25 or 50 users, which I think is all those things can handle even on the biggest of boxes, things go slow because everything is being pushed down into one SMBD. So the problem of demultiplexing a terminal server connection into multiple SMBDs is exactly the same problem as the virtual server front-end demultiplexing onto multiple back-end server pool boxes. And there's some code I've kind of been cooking in my head that I need some time to sit down and write that will basically do that demultiplexing. And at the time that gets put in place, we could adapt it to do the virtual server piece. But to be honest, that's kind of hard. Writing new code is like, well, yeah, need to sit down and take some time for that. So let's see if there's a simpler way of doing it. All right, well, maybe we can do this by exposing the server pool to the clients directly. Hang on a minute. Yeah, I'm on the right page. But let's look at that a little later. Okay, look at the back-end piece of it, the distributed file system. So there are actually many distributed file systems. OpenAFS, which is what the person after me is going to be talking about. There's obviously NFS. There's OpenGFS, which is a GPL code fork off the stuff that Sistina decided to claw back and try and take proprietary. And then there's Lustre, which is the one I'm kind of interested in by a friend of mine, Peter Brom. I'll talk a little bit about that later. So you can use many of these for your back-end file system. The problem is the SMB semantics awareness. There are also some commercial ones like CXFS from SGI. Veritas obviously has a clustered file system. But the problem is it's very hard to even get POSIX semantics right in these clustered file systems. So to add the SMB semantics on top is kind of pushing it a little bit. So the idea would be is to try and keep as much of the SMB semantics as you need in the server pool and then have very low expectations of the back-end file system, basically try and keep it as POSIX-like as possible. And as Andrew talked about yesterday, that's some of the problem with the back-end file systems. So that's great if you're only serving SMB from your clustered SMB server, but most people want to serve NFS as well. And if NFS requests have to have access to that back-end file system, then the problem is when an NFS open comes in, what they call an open, essentially you have to break the op-lock, which means that the NFS server needs to be op-lock aware. The only two current ones, of course, are SGI and the Linux kernel that do this. There are probably some proprietary modifications to other OSs that also do this. But you have to have that op-lock awareness to interoperate correctly with Samba. and otherwise you lose 50% of your performance, which is not very good for a distributed server, of course. So the problem is all this protocol state has to be shared across the pool. So how are we going to do this? So, yeah, you could push it into the file system. Has been done. Single system image products tend to do this. But the problem is they don't match very well. That was the earlier versions of Samba basically pushed this state into the file system. And although they worked, they didn't do a great job of emulating modern SIF semantics like the locking and everything else. So the locks have the wrong sign and they're not usually 64 bits wide, etc. So if we're not going to push the state into the file system, clearly we have to do it between the elements in the server pool, and the main thing is we have to do it really fast, because if for every single file open you've got to scan all the file open table, you don't want to be hanging around for this. You don't want to be sort of, you know, waiting for access to the backend file system for doing that. Now, is there anyone familiar with the Samba code that does the share modes or uplock stuff? And I don't mean team members here. Yes, Andrew, I know you're pretty familiar with that. Anyone else familiar with that area of the code? It looks hairier than it is. It's actually pretty simple, sort of conceptually. It's somewhat modular. You do have to be careful when you're changing it, but it's not the worst piece of code in the world to work on. That's probably NMBD. Modifying this layer is actually doable, and this is even before Andrew's sort of complete rewrite, which we don't know how he's going to handle the opblocks quite yet. So the non-clustered Samba uses this local code to pass the state information between the multiple SMBD processors on one machine. Essentially, all you have to do, and I love the all in that part, all you have to do, a simple matter of programming, is to make that protocol work between machines as well as between local processors on the machine. Because if you think about it, on a multiprocessor system, it's already working in a distributed asynchronous mode because the multiple processors can be scheduled in any order. So all you're doing is extending it to work across a network as well. So actually a lot of the race conditions and problems have already been solved in the code. So you've got to use something else, obviously, than local connections. So fast communication in the backend server pool. And when I first talked about this with Andrew and said, well, couldn't you use something like MOSIX, which provides a distributed shared memory layer for Linux, and couldn't we just sort of map the TDBs into MOSIX's shared memory and then use SCNTL products? Andrew used a very interesting English word to describe that as a solution, beginning with W and ending in K, the right number of letters there. But he didn't think much of it. So a better way is to use some kind of a fast interconnect. Now, commonly, in proprietary large-scale distributed systems, in fact, the kind that Andrew was working on when he was doing his first attempt at a PhD, I think it was, or maybe second, I can't remember now, was something like Mirinet, or basically a proprietary network that's extremely fast, very low latency, that can reasonably do distributed shared memory. However, and you can tell I upgraded my home network a couple of weeks ago, I was wandering around my local rather large electronics store in Silicon Valley and came across gigabit Ethernet cards, fairly good ones, for $60 with a Broadcom chipset. And I thought, well, that's very nice, but how much are the switches? Then I came across a four-port switch for $150 and thought, ooh. So I put myself together a little gigabit network running in parallel to my other network. And that actually may very well be the price point that makes this thing feasible in a large scale, and for people to get the hardware together, play with, and design the algorithms. So you could either do this with a UDP, or maybe, as I say, this is one of the things that Tridge has somewhat more expertise in than I, is that you would use a raw Ethernet protocol to get the speed needed to essentially pass the messages between the different SMBDs. I don't know exactly how fast this will have to be. This is one of those areas where you sort of say more experimentation required. But essentially, I would imagine over the next 6 months or so, part of my job is going to be doing that experimentation and actually testing out how to make this work in a clustered Samba on various HP or other hardware. So if we're going to use a mechanism like that, how do we modify Samba? As I say, the thing that we have to do is to modify the locking database, share modes and op-lock notifications to work over this new fast protocol rather than the current local semantics that they have. So they're kind of fiddly, but they are contained within the Samba 2 and 3 code bases. The other difficult thing is to define the failure semantics. So what happens if one of your nodes in the server pool just dies and it held a lot of state that you wanted to know about? Well, we have a similar problem right now in that if an SMBD gets a seg fault or whatever and it held information in the op-lock database, what do you do about it? So we do have some self-cleaning algorithms. Volker's threatening me to finish. And then the point on the slide I called Roger Bin's revenge. Do we use... Volker got that joke. Do we use a point-to-point, i.e., do we have a process that acts as a lock manager? Or do we actually try and do this in a distributed multicast way? Now, my personal preference is to do this in a distributed way. And let me explain why. This is a point of personal pride. In the very first SIFS conference, there were many other SIFS vendors. I don't know whether any of you remember VisionFS, or there was a company out of Seattle, Syntax, who were selling products similar to Samba. And one of the talks that was given at the very first SIFS conference was by the engineer of VisionFS, Roger Binns, who basically talked about how they had completely perfect lock semantics, share mode semantics, because they had a lock manager that did all of the correct, held all the correct semantics within itself. And he said it was almost impossible to do such a thing and get the correct semantics without a lock manager. So I was sufficiently irritated enough to go into the Samba code and actually try and make it work in a distributed fashion, because I thought that the lock manager would be horribly slow. And in fact, the lock manager was the bottleneck that managed to kill VisionFS, because Samba beat it in speed once we got the semantics correct. Doing it in a distributed way certainly beat VisionFS on speed, and I don't know whether SCO even bothered to sell it anymore. And Roger works on Tarantella and other things now. So I'll be damned if I'm going to go back and admit I was wrong and put a lock manager in place just to do this. So, as I say, my personal preference is to not use a lock manager. So, all right. As I'm sure you know, the virtue of a good programmer is extreme laziness. So how can we make this easier without having to write new code? Well, so imagine that we say, all right, all this distributed lock stuff's really hard. It's going to take a year to code up. Probably about as similar in complexity as getting the original op-lock code right, which I'm sure you remember how long that took. So why don't we do it a different way? Why don't we cheat? There are already products out there that will do failover between multiple machines. So if we still have the virtual server, we can make it appear like a single server, and by embedding knowledge of where parts of the file system are in the virtual server, rather than picking any unused server out of the server pool, we can literally direct requests to the places where they live. So, hey, we're demultiplexing the SMBs. We know where they need to go. Why don't we just push them to a standard failover type server? So, less code, right? And less code is good. So it removes the problem of writing this horrible distributed locking protocol and sharing all this state, because essentially all you've got is one active file server that's serving out one area of the file system. You don't need fast interconnects. You just need to have sets of file servers that basically share out regions of the file space. And if you get too much contention in one area of the file space, you just split that file space, put another set of clustered servers in for reliability, and tell the virtual server layer about the new split in the file space, and theoretically you should go faster. Of course, the problem with that is management of the namespace. It means that the virtual server part has to be aware of where files are. You have to manage the namespace, and administrators have got to remember where things are. You still have to have the front-end server, so that's still a bunch of new code. But it is getting simpler. So I started with the ideal server, and we're getting less and less ideal, and more into the, well, what could we actually fudge up and make work now? So we still have the front-end virtual server, but things are getting a lot simpler. So how this is more of a high-availability server problem, and such things are pretty well understood. I mean, I downloaded the papers. I worked on SGI's fail-safe product, so I pretty much know how the failover systems work. I downloaded Red Hat's cluster server product and took a look at it. And basically, it's the same as the Microsoft Wolfpack, except that Microsoft invented a new set of APIs for it. What a surprise. So essentially, all it is they have a shared disk partition or serial link or whatever to do the heartbeat for the charming protocol that they call shoot the other node in the head if one of them fails. And essentially, these are products that you can buy off the shelf. And in fact, Red Hat talk in their clustering brochures about clustering Sambo, about having failover Sambo with this product. So if you just set the namespace separately and have multiple sets of these products and have the new code of the virtual server in the front, then you would have yourself a clustered version of Sambo. All right, you've got to handle the namespace issues, but it's getting simpler. You don't have to do all these horrible radical code changes. So the remaining new piece of code, remember, laziness is good, so the less code you have to write is better. The remaining new piece of code is the front-end virtual server. So, well, wait a minute. Isn't there a way we can get rid of this? Well, doesn't this look a lot like the existing Microsoft DFS? So you've got a DFS root server, which Sambo already supports. Clients connect to it, start going down a namespace, get a redirect sent back to them, and then they go directly to these failover servers, which are all out-of-the-box solutions. And if you do it that way, of course, you can use an out-of-the-box solution for your front-end server too. So doesn't this mean that we can do something very similar to that today? Well, yeah, we can. So trading programmer complexity for admin complexity, what I like to call trading a simple matter of programming for a simple matter of management, which is always good as a programmer, right? It means that you can essentially set up a root DFS server and you push the complexity of following the links and finding the right path in the client code. And that's great, because we don't write that. That's code that already exists. Microsoft's already got it in there. Seems to work reasonably well. You've got the illusion of a single continuous namespace. Even works at the file level. Right now, the code in Sambo, if you're setting up Microsoft DFS servers, it only allows you to redirect at the directory level. But after a sort of an aside quote from Tridge, I did some experimentation, and I find that, I find that you can actually do this redirect at the file level. I didn't bother to take off the directory attribute when I was testing the code out, so I had a really amusing case of doing a dir in a box, in a command shell, seeing a directory and doing type directory name and having a text file pop out, which was kind of fun. So at the cost of changing the complexity of management to the admins, which, hey, that's you guys and that's where it belongs, from the complexity in the code, which is really hard and, as I say, programmers are lazy, you can actually create a simple clustered, you can create a clustered Sambo solution with failover, with out-of-the-box products and out-of-the-box running Sambo code right now, which is nice. So the conclusion to the talk, because Volker's beating me up to finish, doing clustered SMB is hard for various reasons, and of course the chap who's talking after me will no doubt point out why this talk is complete rubbish and they did it very easily. So if we're going to make Sambo code changes, the place to start messing with it is really in the share mode and op-lock changes, the op-lock code, to add a distributed layer. That's really the hard part and kind of the most fun to work on, and probably what we will be working on to make clustered Sambo work. and then the front-end virtual server will fall out of the terminal server work. It will probably all be finished working and debugged just in time for Tridge's rewrite, which will make it all obsolete. And so the goal is eventually to create all the pieces so that the Linux vendors, out of the box, can create a clustered SMB server that is significantly better than the products that Microsoft offer with Wolfpack. And until we get this done, Linux vendors, if they were able to write and or maintain the management tools, could sell a server that was, again, significantly better than the current Microsoft Wolfpack offering by using MSDFS. But like I say, the difficulty with that is the management complexity. So the references are, I say, a simple matter of management. The references for this are the clustered file systems, OpenGFS is a SourceForge project, all the code available, run by Alan Cox, Lustre, run by Peter Brom. Lustre, I feel, is going to succeed in the open source distributed file system marketplace, mainly because Peter is being sponsored by many of the US weapons labs, and you know how much money they're getting right now. Because they want what they call the global intergalactic file system, which sort of stores, sort of to which 100 terabytes is something that you would have on your local PC, that kind of thing. Then there's OpenAFS, which I'm sure the next speaker will say much more about. AFS is one of those boring projects like Samba, in that they just work and nobody talks about them, kind of like us. And then if you want to know more about DFS and how to set things up and how it works under the covers, that's actually a great link. I use this in preparing this talk. One of the things that I have learned recently is that whenever you want to search a Microsoft site, never, ever go to the Microsoft site and use the search engine, because you won't find anything. Go to Google and type in the same terms and type the Microsoft site that you want to find, because they index the Microsoft sites properly, whereas Microsoft leaves things out that they don't want you to know. So, are there any questions? Oh my God, not one. Oh, yay, yes. So the question is, are these slides available? Volca has a copy of them. They will be available. Yeah. In the pub Samba slides, they're in OpenOffice format. We can make them in PDF, PS, whatever you like. And they'll also be available on the Samba XP website. Surely I wasn't that dull. No one got any questions? All right, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy.